I'm Owen Jensen, tonight on EWTN News Nightly, Hitting the Road. President Donald Trump is in Saudi Arabia to kick off his Middle East trip. We'll have the details. Pushing for peace, Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky says he'll be waiting for Russian President Putin in Turkey on Thursday. How the Kremlin is responding. Disturbing trend. The nation's largest abortion provider releases its annual report. We dig into the tragic numbers. Plus, a new perspective. Learn more about Pope Leo XIV and the Augustinian Order from a close friend of the pontiff. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on this Feast of Our Lady of Fatima, our top story tonight. President Donald Trump calls on Middle Eastern leaders to promote peace and offer a better path forward toward a more hopeful future. During a speech today in Saudi Arabia, he even promised to lift U.S. sanctions on Syria.
I will be ordering the cessation of sanctions against Syria in order to give them a chance at greatness.
President Donald Trump takes the first steps to normalize relations with Syria, calling it their time to shine. He also appealed to Iran, saying he would be happy to make a deal, but the offer won't last forever.
I am willing to end past conflicts and forge new partnerships for a better and more stable world, even if our differences may be very profound, which obviously they are in the case of Iran. I have never believed in having permanent enemies. I am different than a lot of people think.
The president maintains Iran must never have a nuclear weapon. He also encouraged his host, Saudi Arabia, to join the Abraham Accords and recognize Israel.
And I really think it's going to be something special, but you'll do it in your own time, and that's what I want, and that's what you want, and that's the way it's going to be.
Trump received a royal welcome when he landed in Saudi Arabia. Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman greeted him at the airport before traveling to the royal court to meet other political and business leaders during the state visit, including Elon Musk and the head of OpenAI, Sam Altman. President Trump then met with the Saudi Crown Prince at the royal court.
I really believe we like each other a lot.
The two leaders signed agreements to connect the U.S. and Saudi Arabia even closer together before they attended an investment forum.
Tremendous honor to return to this beautiful kingdom and be welcomed back with such extraordinary generosity and warmth.
Saudi Arabia committed to invest $600 billion in the United States.
Here now is Michael Rubin, Senior Fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Michael, thank you very much for joining us. We get right to it. President Trump in Saudi Arabia for the first leg of his three-nation visit to the Middle East this week. Several headlines coming out, including Syria. President Trump now says he's going to lift sanctions on Syria and move to normalize relations with Syria. First, sir, your reaction to that news?
I think it's premature. It's the equivalent of, I'd gladly pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today. The only problem is the stakes here is the possible enrichment of an al-Qaeda affiliate. Ahmed al-Shara, the president of Syria, only controls about 35% of Syrian territory. He's shown himself intolerant, or at least unable to control the intolerant factions within his own government, and he's put off elections for 5 years. To channel billions of dollars of reconstruction aid, potentially, through him, only risks enriching the worst aspects of Middle Eastern societies.
As I mentioned, lots of other headlines coming out of the news today. President Trump also urging Iran to take a new and better path. He's pushing Tehran for a new nuclear deal. He also warned massive maximum pressure if it doesn't come around. Iran, do you believe in the end that there will be a nuclear deal struck?
I don't believe that there will be a nuclear deal struck, or at least let me put it this way. I don't think that there will be a nuclear deal struck that's going to do anything to prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons. Unfortunately, Iran is playing a long game. There's always a problem with U.S. presidents, both Republicans and Democrats, who come into office thinking that the problem, the reason for a lack of agreement previously, had more to do with their predecessors in the Oval Office than it did with their adversaries. The fact of the matter is, Ali Khamenei, the supreme leader of Iran, has spent decades cultivating and building this nuclear program. He just turned 86 years old. He wants to see this come to fruition before he dies. And the fact of the matter is, he's relying on the same old Iranian playbook of running down the clock. If Donald Trump allows him to do that, that's dangerous. One other thing.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Iran has been enriching uranium for 20 some odd years, and yet it has never used the uranium it enriched in its Bushehr civilian nuclear reactor. That shows you that their aims aren't civilian with their program. They are military, pure and simple.
All right, I've got time for one more. As I mentioned, so much coming out of the Mideast today. The president said at the U.S.-Saudi investment conference he wants to avoid conflict with Tehran. So my question then is, do you believe this will come down to military action on the part of Israel, the U.S., or each country doing it on their own to wipe out any future nuclear program?
Well, ultimately, Israel's goal is to protect the state of Israel. It views Iran as an existential threat. Now, Israel has the ability to do a great deal of damage to Iran's nuclear program on its own. Remember, Israel drives more German submarines than the German Navy does. It's demonstrated twice over the last year or 13, 14 months that it can strike Iran with precision. I don't think Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is going to sacrifice the existence of the Jewish state for his own personal relationship with Donald Trump.
And finally, we have 15 seconds. President Trump hopes Saudi Arabia will join the Abraham Accords. Does that ever happen?
It will happen. The problem in Saudi Arabia right now is the king of Saudi Arabia, King Salman, has Alzheimer's disease. Until Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince, becomes king, he's going to delay signing this for fear that he'll be ousted at the last minute.
Well, Michael Rubin, thank you very much for your time. We're out of time right now. We're going to have to let you go, but appreciate your being here today and your insights. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky says he will be waiting for his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, in Turkey later this week. Putin has not yet said whether he will be at the talks, while President Donald Trump is urging the two sides to attend. Zelensky says if Putin does not arrive, he will take it as a sign that he doesn't want to end the war. The Kremlin spokesman says as soon as the president, Putin, considers it necessary, they will make an announcement. Gunmen in Mexico have killed the mayoral candidate ahead of next month's election. It happened in the Gulf Coast state of Veracruz. Yesenia Lara Gutierrez was leading supporters through a small town when she was attacked. Four others, including the woman's daughter, were also killed. Local candidates are historically vulnerable to election violence as organized criminal groups seek to gain control of local governments. Pope Leo XIV paid a visit earlier today to the headquarters of his religious order. Crowds cheered as the new pope emerged from the meetings. The former Cardinal Robert Prevost was twice elected superior of the Augustinians. It formed in the 13th century and is dedicated to poverty, service, and evangelization. The current prior general of the Augustinians knows the new Holy Father well, and in an interview, he shared his personal memories. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sederin has more.
Dominum Robertum Franciscum, Sancte Romane Ecclesiae, Cardinalem Prevost.
Nada más decir Robert, pues.
As soon as they said Robertus, we knew it was him. There were others with that name, but it wasn't very probable that it was going to be them. We gathered together, hugged each other, and started to dance, to move around. I think people were looking at us and were surprised, thinking, what's going on here? And then we told them that he was an Augustinian, that he was one of our brothers.
Father Alejandro Moral Anton, a longtime friend of the new pope, first met him in the early 80s when they were both young student friars. He described the pope as a joyful person, a normal but hard-working man, and first and foremost, a great companion. In an interview with EWTN, he shared his thoughts on why he thinks the College of Cardinals elected him to lead the church.
I believe they saw in him a balanced and prudent person, sensible, and someone who speaks when it's necessary and whose thinking is deep. That is to say, he doesn't speak just to speak, but rather, because he's an intelligent person, he thinks things through and communicates them when he believes what he has to say is important, that it can offer something new or help strengthen an ongoing conversation.
with experience as provincial prior and later prior general, followed by his role as apostolic administrator and then bishop of Chiclayo in Peru. Pope Leo carried out duties that provided him with valuable missionary experience, but also led to challenges. In 2022, while Pope Leo was bishop of Chiclayo, allegations surfaced involving sexual abuse claims made by some girls against a priest. Despite allegations that then Robert Prevost mishandled the cases, Father Alejandro explained to EWTN that Prevost followed the proper procedures.
These are very unjust things. When you've done things and worked hard to get something started, and then you read the article saying, well, there was an investigation, but it wasn't thorough. But was there an investigation or not? And why put a headline saying the case was archived? That implies it wasn't even looked at. Let's not lie, because deceiving people is one of the great evils of this world.
Father Alejandro shared that he has no doubt that Pope Leo XIV will lead the Church with wisdom and strength. Though the task ahead is immense, he is prepared to meet it with faith and dedication.
He had his fears, but he's a man who doesn't say no. He moves forward, and I believe that with everyone's support and the guidance of the Holy Spirit, he will lead the Church well.
In Rome, Benedict Siadigrian, EWTN News Nightly.
We have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including budget battle, a report and reaction as lawmakers take a closer look at the White House's big, beautiful bill. And a little later, a new creed is making waves in Australia, why it's so popular among Christians. House Republicans are holding a markup of the massive reconciliation bill, and there are unresolved policy fights that could unravel President Donald Trump's big, beautiful bill. Those battles include cuts to food programs for the needy and coming up with a final number for state and local tax deductions. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with a rundown. Eric.
Well, good evening, Owen. Right now, the reconciliation bill is being dissected in the Commerce Committee. Those lawmakers are focused on finding $880 billion in savings over the next 10 years in the Medicaid program, a program that affects millions of people. The committee is planning to plow ahead with a marathon markup that's likely to continue all night and through Wednesday. Republicans continue to say that the savings will come from waste, fraud, and abuse.
We are prepared to stop the billions of dollars of waste, fraud, and abuse in the Medicaid program by beginning to rein in the loopholes, by ensuring states have the flexibility to remove ineligible recipients from their rolls, and removing beneficiaries who are enrolled in multiple states.
We need to stop them. All these people are here today for a big reason. We need to make sure that we're protecting the most vulnerable. Kid care and nursing home care and care for the disabled would be decimated in Florida, so I'll be voting no.
I deserve to live in my community. Just because I'm in a chair doesn't mean I can't do everything that everybody else does.
Dozens of disabled Americans pack the hallways outside the committee hours ahead of time, hoping to show lawmakers what cuts to Medicaid might mean to them.
It would be devastating. Most of the folks here use Medicaid for what's called home and community services, where they get help at home to stay out of institutions and nursing facilities, which, by the way, cost three times more.
As the hearing started, several dozen were arrested. And even more outside in the hallway for demonstrating. Over in the Ways and Means Committee, Republicans are trying to satisfy many of their own who want increased numbers in state and local tax deductions. Right now, it's at $30,000. Several Republicans say that's not enough. And several Republicans, including Congressman Chip Roy of Texas, already said he's a no because the bill doesn't have enough spending cuts, to which the speaker replies.
No one's going to get 100% of what we want. Chip's one of my best friends. We communicated within the last hour, and we'll talk again today, but I think we'll get everybody to yes.
And later tonight, the Agricultural Committee takes up the contentious plan for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also known as SNAP, which feeds about 42 million Americans annually. The Trump administration wants states to pay for more of the program, decisions that could affect several Catholic organizations, such as Catholic Charities, which rely on SNAP dollars in their outreach efforts. I'll have more on what's coming out of these committees tomorrow on EWTN News Nightly. For now, Owen, back to you.
All right, Eric, thank you very much for that report. Joining us now is Tony Holland, founder of Global Premier Benefits, an organization that helps people navigate the world of health insurance, which we all know can be complicated at times. Tony, thank you for being here. I want to start just with the basics right away. For folks out there who don't know specifically what Medicaid is, it's not Medicare, we know, it's not Obamacare. Define it, please, in simple terms, Medicaid.
Simply put, Medicaid is a partnership between the states and the federal government to provide affordable health care for those that need it the most, the lowest income individuals in our society.
How many, sir, do you know are on Medicaid right now across the U.S.?
There's millions, and this is potentially going to affect about 8 million recipients.
Okay, so we know now we got the basics out of the way. As lawmakers on Capitol Hill, we saw in that report, they're supporting the president's bill, trying to get it across the goal line, the finish line. There's also the issue of Medicaid, and Republicans say, as we've seen, they're trying to root out waste and fraud and abuse. Democrats say millions of Americans will be hurt and lose coverage. Where does it all stand, in your opinion?
In my opinion, first of all, it's $880 billion in potential cuts over a 10-year period. And I truly believe when Congress gets together and they meet, some things are going to make sense to move forward on, some things won't. I think there should be additional requirements, especially for eligibility, in terms of the working for at least 80 hours a month, or volunteering, or attending school. I think that should be part of the package. Those that are able-bodied should not receive benefits. Those benefits should go to those that need the benefits the most.
Do you believe there's a lot of abuse right now? And is there,
absolutely,
are you able to
quantify?
There's
a lot of abuse.
Okay.
Yes. It's going to prevent states from funding undocumented immigrants that are on Medicaid that shouldn't be. There's definite challenges with the provider tax changes that will affect the funding, those that have taken advantage of the system. And even going back to the Biden administration, that was addressed, that was a serious challenge that needed to be resolved. But I want to make sure your audience knows that this is not going to affect pregnant women. About 50% of newborns are covered under the Medicaid system. That's a lot. It's not going to affect the elderly, are those that legally qualify. It's not going to affect those that are disabled children, those that are medically exempt, that rely on Medicaid are going to be just fine. So I think the whole goal is to make Medicare more efficient. I think government as a whole needs to be more efficient by reducing waste, fraud, and abuse, sir.
What if there are no cuts to Medicaid? Just let it go as is.
I think it's going to be a huge challenge because it can't sustain itself if we have undocumented immigrants that are on the system with all the fraud, the waste and abuse. It's not going to be able to sustain itself. And ultimately, those that need the benefits the most are going to suffer.
And if I'm a mom or a dad, single parent perhaps, have a few kids at home, relying on Medicaid to take my child to the doctor for that earache, I'm worried right now, seeing the headlines. I'm fearful,
yes,
that I'm going to lose this. It's going to hurt,
yes,
my family. Even the fear sometimes is enough to make people not want to pursue it or the coverage of it. What do you say to,
yes,
those folks?
I believe they're going to be just fine. Those that are have the medical exemptions, those that legally qualified, if their kids are having challenges medically, that are disabled, they're going to be just fine. It's those that are abusing the Medicaid system that won't be fine.
Tony Holland, we're going to have to leave it there, and we'll see how it all plays out on Capitol Hill. Thanks for your time.
It was an honor. God bless.
Okay,
thank you.
Take care. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, a new creed is making headlines down under, and a church leader is helping it gain steam, what it says and why Christians are signing on. Plus, a legal battle is brewing in California, and at the center is the abortion pill, why pro-lifers say they are being censored. Pro-lifers in California are trying to stop what they say is censorship of the effectiveness of abortion pill reversals. The state's attorney general sued 5 pro-life pregnancy centers back in 2023. He says their claims a drug can reverse chemical abortions are misleading. In a lawsuit, the pro-lifers say the attorney general violated freedom of speech and religious freedom. The nation's largest abortion provider has released its annual report. Planned Parenthood says, according to its most recent data from 2023, it performed 402,230 abortions. That's up 2.4%, a new record. Planned Parenthood also received more than $790 million in taxpayer funds. That is an increase of more than 13%. The report also says nearly 97% of the women seeking help for their pregnancy were given an abortion rather than prenatal care or a plan for an adoption. And for every adoption referral, Planned Parenthood performed 187 abortions. For more now, we turn to Michael New, Senior Associate Scholar for the Charlotte Loser Institute and an Assistant Professor of Practice at the Catholic University of America. Michael, good to see you. That report, you know, you read the numbers and you're just tragic, right? But what stands out to you in that report, Planned Parenthood's annual report?
Well, it's sadly the same story every year. They do more abortions. They did over 400,000. Sadly, that's a new record. They received more taxpayer funding, over $790 million. That's a 13% increase over the previous year. And they do less and less in the way of health services. Cancer screenings fell by 8%. Primary care visits fell by more than 13%. UTI treatments fell by more than 45%. So it's kind of the same story every year. More abortions, more taxpayer funding, and less health care.
So right now, as you well know, you're well aware, efforts to defund Planned Parenthood are happening in Congress. Do you think that'll happen?
I'm cautiously optimistic. You know, I think Republicans have a unique opportunity because right now Republicans control both the presidency and both chambers of the House. There's a real effort in the reconciliation package, which is helpful because we only need a majority to get that through. So again, this is a unique opportunity for the pro-life movement. We've invested a lot of time, effort, energy, resources. Speaker Mike Johnson's been very outspoken. He's made it very clear he wants Planned Parenthood defunded. So again, I can't predict the future, but I think we have a strong chance.
On that subject, let me read something here. SBA, Pro-Life America, well-known pro-life organization, says, quote, big abortions lying pressure campaign is in full swing, end quote. The lie is that defunding Planned Parenthood, quote, will strip Americans from being able to get basic health care, end quote. And SBA says some lawmakers are buying that lie. Do you see it that way as well, sir?
Absolutely not. That, you know, what can happen is that you can, you know, through Medicaid, get health care coverage through federally qualified health care centers. And they outnumber Planned Parenthood by a significant margin. And especially in, you know, rural parts of the country, you know, conservative parts of the country, these fairly qualified health centers, you know, are pretty prevalent, whereas Planned Parenthood are very scarce. So people get the health care they need. They just can't get the health care they need from places like Planned Parenthood that perform abortions.
Right, but do you think lawmakers, as SBA pointed out, lawmakers, some of them are falling for this lie by Planned Parenthood?
Yeah, I hope not. I mean, I think Democrats, for political reasons, are going to always support Planned Parenthood. They get a lot of money from the abortion industry. I'm hoping that the Republicans hold their ground. You know, I think we have the data there. If the Republicans are willing to listen to what we have to say, I think we have a very compelling argument, and I think we can make some real headway in getting Planned Parenthood defunded this year.
In addition, USCCB, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, says in addition to all their abortions that they perform, Planned Parenthood, quote, is a leading provider of gender transition hormone treatments, gender transition in quotes there, including the minors, and they're also calling for a defunding of Planned Parenthood and asking for Catholics to contact their local lawmakers.
I mean, that's correct. I mean, that, you know, the gender transition, quote-unquote, treatments have been lucrative for Planned Parenthood. It's kind of interesting. In the report, they're very open about the number of abortions they do. They always have been. They don't really talk much about, quote-unquote, gender transition much. They don't give hard data. I think they realize it's politically sensitive. I don't think they want to advertise how much they do. But again, I agree that this is a revenue source for them. It certainly runs contrary to church teaching, and I think is another compelling reason to defund Planned Parenthood.
Well, we'll see if that indeed happens in the coming weeks. I know they want to have this bill done by Memorial Day. And Michael New, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it, and you're always welcome here.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Okay. Well, a church leader in Australia is among those supporting a push to affirm Christian beliefs on human sexuality. Archbishop Julian Porteous of Hobart is among 6,000 people who signed the Australian Creed for Sexual Integrity. It was drafted late last year by more than 100 Christian faith leaders, including Catholic clergy. The statement says in part, quote, "We believe our bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit that Christ calls and empowers us to repent from all sin, including sexual sin, that His mercy abounds to forgive and restore, and that by living with sexual integrity, we glorify God and humbly embrace His wise and loving plan for human life." We thank you very much for watching our program tonight. Remember, you can always follow us on social media, Facebook, X, Instagram, lots of others. At EWTN News Nightly, I'm Owen Jensen. Good night. God bless you.